Geico says, let's make life simpler.
Look, I'm all for modern conveniences. But ask yourself, do you really need a blender with 23 buttons just to chop an onion? At Geico, we think life should be simpler. So we make it super simple to save on car insurance. Just one click and you could be on your way to saving hundreds. Come on, people. Life doesn't have to be that complicated.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
At Advance Auto Parts, we don't do anything just partway. We go full throttle. We don't just sell oil. Oh, no. We work to bring you big deals on oil. Right now at Advance, get a 5-plus quart jug of Valvoline conventional motor oil and a filter for just $20.99. Yeah, $20.99. Now, that's a deal worth getting your hands dirty for. A Valvoline oil change special at Advance Auto Parts.
Advance Auto Parts.
See store for details.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Everybody get ready for Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. A foodie born and bred, my wife Nikki loves chatting up chefs, dining out, and insider industry buzz.
And my husband David thinks a great meal is nothing but a good burger, a frosty brew, and a check for under $20. Because he is cheap.
Well, maybe so, but Foodie married Beast anyway, and together we've got the food and wine variety show that has everyone talking.
It's Foodie and the Beast, and we are on now.
Hey, everybody, it's David and Nikki Nellis on Foodie and the Beast. Welcome, welcome. We got a lot to celebrate today. It is our wedding anniversary. She's been married. She's the luckiest woman in the world for the last 16 years. Congratulations, Nikki.
It feels a lot longer. I mean, a lot longer. And I have the wrinkles to
prove
it.
And I got good news. I'm not going to die. So there you go.
Oh, well.
And it's also this show's fourth anniversary. Four years ago. This weekend, we launched the show.
I know, so, it's amazing.
And look at us now.
And we're still here.
Watch out, Howard Stern. Stand back. All right, we got a great show going on. Mitch Berliner's on with Central Farm Markets. He's going to be talking about their Oyster and Barbecue Festival out on Rockville Pike on the 13th.
And everybody in D.C. has always complained that what are we missing on the restaurant scene?
A deli.
A deli, a real deli. And lots of people have tried and lots of people have failed. But I think in studio today we have the winners, DGS. The deli is coming to D.C., and we have Barry Koslov and Nick Wiseman to talk all about it.
And Scott Heimendinger is the Director of Applied Research with Modernist Cuisine. You might remember the six-volume, 2,400-page monster cookbook that came out a couple of years ago.
Just a year ago.
Well, it seems like a couple years.
It's just a year.
Your marriage.
I know.
They've got something new, and that's Modernist Cuisine at Home. We'll be talking all about that.
And we've had Catoctin Creek in before, and we've had J&G Steakhouse before. It's like peanut butter and chocolate. They have come together to make their own new signature whiskey. And Guy Gollin and Scott Harris are going to tell us all about it.
Peanut butter and chocolate?
Yeah, you know, like Reese's.
That's disgusting. Anyways.
You know what I'm talking about.
And Ann Cashin is in here with Johnny Folchino. They're both partners at Johnny's Half Shell. And they're going to be talking about, and of course, is the legendary chef. Have you always lived here?
No, but I've lived here for 27 years.
And
she is a James Beard
Award winner, and she's hot stuff, and Johnny is no less hot stuff.
Thank you.
And I mean that the way only a man can mean with another man. And we're going
to
be talking new drinks at the restaurant and some new projects they have going on. But first, let's talk to Mitch Berliner about this oyster event at Central Farm Markets out on Rockville Pike. Are you there, Mitch?
I certainly am.
Hey, Mitch, how are you?
So what is this? With
congratulations on all the various and sundry anniversaries.
I'm sure your gift is in the mail.
Of course. You haven't gotten it already?
Right.
What, that 9/11 that was parked out front? Great. God bless you, my son.
That was it.
All right, so let's talk oysters and barbecue.
Yeah, what are you guys doing?
Well, I'm a victim of my own craziness, and we always want to have something different and exciting at the market. So not this weekend, but next Saturday at our North Bethesda Rockville location, the Pike Central Farm Market, we are going to be featuring oysters from the bay, really cutting-edge oyster aquaculture.
What makes it cutting-edge?
Well, it's cutting-edge because they're the first people doing it, and they've created their own equipment. They're going to tell people how they're raising oysters, bringing the oysters back to Chesapeake here in Maryland. Mm-hmm. And we'll teach you how to shuck them. We, of course, we'll eat them. We're probably going to grill some. And we will have wine tasting. We will have face painting. We will have fabulous music by a Grammy award-nominated group, White Loafer. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
What? Okay. So you'd say you're going to have wine painting and face tasting, or did I get that wrong?
If you have too much wine, who knows?
Who knows?
And tell us about the barbecue. What's the barbecue aspect of it?
It's Old Smoky. It's the coolest barbecue unit you've seen. It's an old, not an old, but it's made to look like an old train, and it's a smoker. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I think we've seen it at the market. He comes to the market, doesn't he?
Yeah, it comes to the market from time to time, but it hasn't been there for a while, so we're bringing that guy. Kids can come and ring the bell.
Old Smoky.
Brisket, pulled pork, chicken, smoked chickens, you name it.
Fabulous.
And it's just going to be a lot of fun. Of course, all our markets are kid and dog friendly.
That's always good. Even our dogs?
Our dogs love your market.
All the dogs love our
market. They do. They love to pull the chicken off the table. And...
Right. Exactly. And anybody can find out about our markets by going to centralfarmmarkets.com. That's plural, centralfarmmarkets.com. Mm-hmm. Find out about what we're doing every Saturday, every Sunday, all the festivals.
Well, let's remind everybody. So Saturdays, you're on the Pike.
Right. We're on the corner of 355 and Old Georgetown Road.
That's where mm-hmm. Toys R Us is.
Used to be.
Exactly.
No, they're still there.
Exactly.
They moved up the mall.
Oh, I thought they destroyed that part.
They still have a presence there.
You
and
don't know.
We are on the site of the old Silver Diner, which has now been turned into a park.
Right.
So we put out tents and tables and chairs, and people just stay for the day. There's plenty of food that you can purchase and eat there, like Mia's wood-burning pizza and lots of great stuff.
Wait, Mia's Bethesda?
Mia Bethesda, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. How cool.
Yeah, so she has a mobile pizza oven, and she brings it every Saturday to the Pike Central Market and every Sunday to the parking lot of the Bethesda Elementary School.
That is cool.
Or the Sunday Market.
We love Melissa. She's
all right.
Great.
And
so,
all the ingredients are gathered from the market. She makes a breakfast pizza with, eggs from the market, et cetera.
All right. Give us quickly your web address so people can check it out, and then we're going to have to say ta-ta.
Well, thank you again. It's centralfarmmarkets.com. Mm-hmm. We invite everybody in Washington, Maryland area to come and visit. And again, I want to wish you guys all the best. Enjoy yourself, and may you be together many, many more years.
Thank you,
well,
Rabbi
thanks,
Berliner.
Mitch.
Thank
and you. Everybody, right. Just remember, it's the Oyster and Barbecue Festival. It's happening on the Pike on October 13th. Of course, you can go to both markets this weekend, but don't miss the festival. It sounds like a tremendous amount of fun.
All right, bye, Mitch. Thank you.
Thanks, Mitch.
All right, so let's get back to Ann Cashin
and
Johnny Fulcino.
Well, let's start with Ann and
but
Johnny.
We said hello.
Okay.
So are you going or am I going?
Huh? Go ahead. Have at it.
Well, I was just going to say, I remember Johnny's Half Shell from down around DuPont Circle. Now you're up on the hill. It's really become an iconic spot. And, you're a legend in your own time, pal. So, but tell us what's going on up there now. Obviously, when you say Half Shell, it's fresh seafood, but there's other stuff too.
Yeah, there's other stuff too. We just launched a new cocktail menu, and I think I'm going to make you guys a cocktail this morning.
I think you better.
Okay,
yeah.
Why did you launch a new cocktail menu?
It just seemed like the right thing to do. I was really interested. Our wine list is pretty significant, and I've always pursued that. But we wanted to try to get a lot of people in for happy hour. A lot of people enjoy
on the hill. People on the hill doing happy hour?
Yeah,
that sounds like a foreign concept.
Well, you're
concept.
Saying that the people that run our government drink?
Yes.
Because after last night, they should be drinking.
Yes.
Jesus.
And they should be drinking
And they probably
this.
Will be drinking this evening.
Yes.
But why cocktails? Because it's true, you've always been known for your wine program. So what made you decide to dip your toes into that?
Well, I think there's a lot of people that agree that the spirits in America right now are really kind of very interesting, really artisan spirits that are out there.
So you're actually
have
dipping your
Scott
toes?
Have you met Scott Harris?
Yes,
have you
I
guys
have.
Been introduced?
Yes,
okay.
Yes. So,
but do I understand correctly that you're actually dipping your toes in the spirits, according
yes.
to my wife?
Yes.
That's gross. I like it. That's probably why
some
everybody's
people,
getting...
Some people like that
That's
kind
why
of
everybody's
stuff.
Getting drunk. Well, I'm kinky. I can go for it.
But this particular spirit I brought today is interesting. It's Hum, and we're going to do a Hum and Stormy this morning. So.
Okay, what is Hum?
Hum is a liqueur that's made from four rich botanicals, cardamom, hibiscus, ginger, and lime, kaffir lime.
Ooh.
And it's distilled in a pot, and then it's bottled unfiltered to kind of retain all the flavors.
It's too bad nobody came up with a drink called Toshin, because then these guys at their deli could have Hum and Toshin. Am I right, or am I right?
Yeah, we're
right.
Working on it.
I'm right.
You're definitely right.
God bless you, mate.
Okay. All right, well, we're going to let you start making that.
Okay.
And then since that was a really lame segue, we will get
I don't think it was lame.
It was lame.
You're so jealous.
I'm not jealous.
I've known for
that.
16 years I've been waiting to tell you this. All right.
Okay,
all right,
so let's get into Barry and Nick.
Well, Barry and Nick, one of the big complaints, obviously, in D.C. was that there never have been and aren't any good delis, and I'm sure...
Well, actually, a couple delis have opened in the last couple of years, and they've all closed.
Right.
Like, there were two in Bethesda,
well,
dead.
Because the word is it's impossible to deliver a true deli experience here. So you
well,
guys,
I know, but why is that the word? I mean, that's the question. Why is it hard to do a deli when everybody wants it here in D.C.?
I think the first question you have to ask yourself is, what is a deli?
Okay.
Because...
Can I ask it out loud?
Please.
What is a deli?
I'm going to ask
no
Nick,
idea.
Nick, what's a deli?
What is a deli?
Well, delis have changed from the early part of the 1900s when they were mom-and-pop stores that specialized in one or two things. And after industrialization, all the delis became diners with 10-page menus and, you know, super thick sandwiches that nobody could eat.
But we're all delis. I feel like I have to raise my hand. Wait. But we're all delis.
Oh,
thank you. Thanks. We're all delis Jewish delicatessens? I mean, are delis and delicatessens in
not essence, in D.C.
Not
I mean,
in D.C.
There's a deli on every corner if you go downtown. There's not anything Jewish about them. A lot of them are
salad
by the pound.
I don't think of those as deli. I mean, that doesn't occur to me that those things are deli.
We're a delicatessen, and we're kind of going back to the roots, while at the same time we're sort of a next generation deli, because we'll be doing dinner, we have a full bar, we have dine-in and carry-out, and what separates us from other delis or delicatessens in D.C. is that we're going to make everything from scratch.
Okay, but let's talk about these delis, what you're calling delis in D.C. I mean, when I think of a deli, I think of, I grew up in New Jersey and going into New York and City. Like, I think of Russ and Daughters.
Sure, everybody's shocked to hear that, by the way.
And Katz's. And, you know, like, the delis where I grew up on Sunday morning, my dad would go in and get smoked fish. And, you know, it was like smoked fish and bagels for the morning. And then he would pick up roast beef and corned beef and pastrami, you know, for dinner that night, and coleslaw and bialys and all that. So that is what a deli is. And right now there's nobody offering those kinds of offerings. So is that the vein you're going into?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, if you look back, delicatessen is a German word.
Okay.
You know, it's about delicacy. So, I mean, we're really trying to go back to that spirit, that craftsmanship. I mean, the name is DGS, District Grocery Store, which was a cooperative of mom-and-pop Jewish grocery stores around D.C., and each one had a trade. Each one had a personality. They either baked bread or smoked fish or everyone did something. There was a lot of craftsmanship there.
Okay.
And that's been lost. And you see, I mean, all the places you mentioned in New York, there was a lot of craftsmanship there.
Absolutely.
And I think in the 50s when the overstuffed sandwiches came in vogue, sort of lost that whole spirit to the delicatessen. So we really want to bring that back. And it's not – I think deli evokes this feeling of like just a sandwich shop, you know, somewhere you could find on every corner that just, you know, slices pre-made meats and puts it on, you know – already sliced white bread. So we're trying to really push beyond that. And, you know, our focus, like Barry said, is doing everything in-house. We'll be smoking and curing and brining all our pickles, all our meats, all our fish in-house. And
I have to jump in. I noticed that you brought some of your pickles. So I think you ought to crack that bad boy open. And
so
let's
are you going
to
have, like, a pickle bar?
No.
No?
We'll have a pickle plate.
Oh, a pickle plate.
And we'll be doing seasonal vegetables.
No. Pickle plate.
I can't. But no bar.
Okay. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Of course.
Like a lot of the old,
yeah,
they used to have like with the health salad and tomatoes and all that kind of stuff.
You know, we won't have any long deli counter or a laminated menu or a pickle bar. I mean, I think we want to make this food accessible. And, you know, we brought on a team that, you know, we can, you know, try to make this food. Like we said, the delicatessen is just like, you know, people think of it as just a corner store where you go get sandwiches, and we're really pushing the food beyond that.
Should we let our listeners hear the crunch?
Yeah, we can. I can hear it already. You chew so loudly. It's annoying. But so let's just talk about that. I mean, what are we going to have on that menu? And Barry, what are you like? Are you smoking the fish? Are you curing all the meat?
Yes.
Doesn't that take a lot of time?
Yes. That's why delis don't exist.
Will there be everything? Will there be pickled herring and sour cream? And
well, we'll be pickling bluefish.
Yum.
You know, we're kind of doing our own takes on some things. Some things will be as traditional as we can make. A matzo ball soup, you know, why change that? It's perfect. But we have our own take a little bit on, like, halishkis, which are stuffed cabbage, which we'll be stuffing with beef and rye bread. And we're doing a, you know, traditional sweet and sour sauce.
Kreplach and all that?
Yeah, we're doing a bacalao kreplach. So a lot of stuff, we're not trying to reinvent the wheel, but we are trying to modernize it a little bit. And yeah,
that's where we should have Eli's bar mitzvah.
Let's not talk about Eli's bar mitzvah.
Tell us, man.
We'll talk to you after the show.
All right, listen, we have to take a quick break. But when we come back, I do want to talk about some of the smoking techniques and what really people are going to find on the menu. And let's talk a little bit about your bar program. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. I'm crunching on a really yummy pickle, and we'll be back in just a sec. Hey, everybody, I've got a special do not miss invitation. Join us, Foodie and the Beast, Sunday, October 14th at 11 a.m. for a live broadcast. Now, we're going to be at one of D.C.'s great restaurants, the fabulous Postmodern Brasserie. Now, if you haven't been to one of our live shows, this is the one not to miss, because our live shows rock. And we're going to be at one of the city's best outdoor spaces, the Post Courtyard. Of course, we'll be talking to celebrity guests like Chef Dennis Marin. And you can bet, if you listen to our show, you know, there'll be good treats and Bloody Marys. So join us at Post on Sunday, October 14th. For information, call 202-783-6060.
Hi, this is O'Donna Matthews. What does 3 decades of service add up to? For the Capital Area Food Bank, it includes these important numbers. Distributing 25 million pounds of food to nearly 500,000 people through a network of 700 partner agencies. 30 years, it's a long time, but the mission continues to make sure that no one is left hungry. To learn more, contribute, or volunteer, visit capitalareafoodbank.org.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
Soon, this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible.
March for Babies!
Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
All right, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. It's the anniversary show. I love you, honey. Come on, say it back.
Oh, were you talking to me?
Yeah, come on.
Oh.
Come on, say it back.
I love you, too.
Now we've got it on tape. Yeah. All right, we're with Nick Wiseman and Barry Kozlov, and we're talking about their new deli that's opening up in sort of in the right off. Delicatessen.
Hello, opening where have you
off
been?
I've been eating pickles. Opening off of DuPont Circle. And let's talk real quick about bagels. What up with bagels? Because that's been the other issue here is where in D.C. can you get a bagel? Now, Georgetown Bagelry is one of our
sponsors.
Well, but they've been providing bagels to the show for 4 years, and they're good bagels.
They are good bagels.
They're H&H-ish.
I mean, they're not like New York bagels, but they're good. No. You guys keep
so
that, you know.
So what are you guys doing for bagels?
I think talking about bagels is kind of like talking about politics in D.C. I think if you ask anybody, they're going to...
Was very quiet last night.
I was going to say, should they have been in the debates last night, perhaps?
Was asleep last night.
Yeah. We're trying to stay out of the bagel debate. I mean, I think there's so many opinions about bagels. Some people like big, huge, dense bagels. Some people like light, fluffy bagels. And a lot of it's memory. You know, the bagel that you get might not match up to the bagel somebody had 15 years ago.
Half of the country eats a bagel that is literally Wonder Bread, like stamped out. I mean, they're not eating...
It's like bread with a hole in it. Right.
They're not eating real bagels. I mean, so there is an education process for people who have been eating just bread shaped like a bagel, don't you think?
True.
So there's two types of bagels, really. There's the New York style bagel, which is a bigger bagel, and it's boiled, and then it's baked. And then there's the Montreal style bagel, which is also boiled, but it's boiled in honey water. And then it's baked, but it's in a wood-fired oven, so you get a lot more char, and you toast the seeds
on the
outside
of the bagel. So it's a sweeter bagel?
It's a sweeter bagel, and it's smaller.
But no salt.
No salt.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it makes it a better vehicle, which is how we intend to use bagels. It's more for to showcase our cured fish or smoked fish.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the smoked fishes that you're going to be doing?
We'll be doing a lot with salmon and different varieties of salmon, but we'll be doing lox and pastrami salmon. We'll
Any sturgeon?
Doing, sturgeon, sable.
Isn't your brother a sturgeon? Not
yeah.
you.
He's a surgeon, in case you didn't get that.
And pickled bluefish, like I said.
Thank you. You could do that, Scott, the rest of the show.
What
Thank
did you,
you
just
so much.
Ba-dum-tsh.
Okay. So when are you guys going to open?
We are, we're still coordinating getting water into the space, but we are, you know, soon. Let's put it in soon.
All right, give us the address. Give us the web address.
It's just south of DuPont Circle. It's 1317 Connecticut Avenue, one block south of DuPont. The web address is dgsdelicatessen.com.
Well, and I have to say, again, I think I'm speaking for almost everybody in this city. D.C. has been dying for a really good delicatessen, especially one that is Jewish in its total feel.
Jewish.
Jewish-ish.
Jewish-ish?
Jewish-ish. You know what I mean, though? Like, we just
Absolutely.
Don't have it here, and I'm really looking
You know what
forward
disturbs me? The Jews control the delicatessen.
I know.
It's a conspiracy.
Anyway, guys, thanks so much for coming in, and
thanks
the
for
pickles
having us.
Were just delicious.
All right, so let's quickly get back to Johnny Fulchino
like,
and Ann Cashin.
This drink tastes like a cure-all. Like,
I
feel like
know,
if I wasn't feeling well in the morning,
dudes
this
are
is what I
bogarting my drink. Let me have a sip of that thing.
Very aromatic,
let's
huh?
see.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
it's yours,
yeah.
Oh my God, it's so lovely. I enjoy
yes.
it so much. How did you come up with this?
A guy named Adam Seeger from Chicago is a mixologist, and he's the one who came up with this. It's very aromatic. The botanicals are very rich, and I find it to be, I think it's a healthy drink.
It feels healthy. Like, I feel healthier now.
I think
than
I should
I've
drink one
it.
Every morning.
It's a potent spirit, however. It's
is
like,
it potent?
It's 70%, yeah, so I'm sure Adam would have
okay, maybe I shouldn't drink so much of that.
A little issue with me saying it. But it really is, I think, really refreshing. I love it. And we can also do it with champagne instead of using
Because you need more alcohol.
No, a different cocktail altogether would be like a Hum Royale. So we do that at the restaurant as well. But this
so what's
one,
the name of this drink?
This is a Hum and Ginger, Hum and Stormy. It's with ginger beer. And we use Zevatry ginger beer, which I
love. I got so many better names for it than that. But just me.
Well, what's pronounce the last name of our next guest?
You mean Scott Heimendinger?
Yeah. Could
yeah.
you call it that?
Well, he's there.
Close, right?
All right. So, Scott, you're on the phone, yeah?
I am.
Well, hi.
We're drinking. We're having a cocktail in your name now.
Yes,
we've changed the
thank
name
you.
Of the cocktail.
I appreciate
we're going to call it the Heimendinger.
And so, it's yummy.
So we might as well start talking to Scott. Scott, again, is the Director of Applied Research for Modernist Cuisine, which, if anybody remembers, and Nikki corrected me, it wasn't a couple years ago. It was about a year ago that this massive six-volume 2,400-page, unbelievable sort of new version cookbook came out that not only had, you know, I mean, obviously it had recipes, but was a real sort of, it was a scientific approach to the preparation of food. And Scott, and at that point we had Maxime, I want to say the right name, Maxime Billet, is that correct?
That's correct, yeah.
He was on our show last year to tell us all about it. I mean, it was fascinating. But, you know, so give us a little background here. I mean, at what point did you get involved with this project?
Well, I was kind of unofficial fan club president when Modernist Cuisine.
You're a groupie?
Came out.
You're a groupie.
I was totally a groupie. I was the groupie. It spoke to my soul, you know. And I happen to live in Seattle, the same city where the Modernist Cuisine Cooking Lab is located and where all this cool stuff was going down.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of became a friend of the lab, worked my way in, and then at the end of last year, I accepted this job with the Modernist Cuisine team, sort of a geek's dream come true to go from number one fan to actually making an impact working
Now, you're not going to go crazy like Selena's fan club manager, right?
No,
okay,
no, hopefully
good.
Not. I think the background checks here are pretty thorough.
Yeah, I bet they are. But so were you already doing this stuff in your house? I mean, were you cooking this way?
Yes, I was. I had a day job. I worked at Microsoft during the day, but after work, I would work on SeattleFoodGeek.com, which is a personal blog that I started a few years back to
mm-hmm.
kind of do modernist cooking at home, often with improvised equipment. I've got a little basement laboratory that's nothing like our actual Modernist Cuisine cooking lab, but would still be enough to get me in trouble with the DEA if they ever swung by.
That's okay. Don't worry. Nobody's listening. Go ahead.
Sorry, we're calling you from our meth lab, so it's okay.
So I've been doing sort of scientific approach experiments to cooking for quite some time, and so being able to actually join up with the official Modernist Cuisine team as director of applied research has been a dream come true.
All right, now I gotta
no.
Okay, what is? I mean, director of applied research. You sound like Dr. No. But here's my question. When Modernist Cuisine came out, you know, Nikki is a foodie and a great cook, truly a chef.
I'm not a chef.
And she went through it. Yes, you are. Don't be modest. But anyways, I looked at it and I'm totally not that. I went kind of blank. But now, if you know, as the title suggests, it's Modernist Cuisine at home. So I guess my question is, you know, now can we at home now learn the secrets of the pros and understand how things work? I mean, did you have to dumb down everything to make this viable for people at home? Because the other one was clearly for the industry.
Sure. So when the team created Modernist Cuisine, it was definitely a no-holds-barred approach. It said any equipment, any ingredients that you can get your hands on would be considered fair game for experimentation. But we got a lot of feedback from folks saying, hey, this is so cool, I'm learning all about this, but could you help me do similar things with the equipment that I already own, things that I already have in my home kitchen, or you know, things that would be within range, stuff that you might be able to buy at a kitchen store.
Mm-hmm.
And that was sort of the genesis of our new book, Modernist Cuisine at Home. It has the same production quality as Modernist Cuisine, but all of the recipes and techniques that are in the book are things that you could definitely do in your home kitchen.
So do you feel like what was in the original book, I mean, did you just take the actual recipes and dumb them down, basically?
No. In a lot of cases, we expanded on them.
Okay.
So there's a huge amount of brand new recipes in Modernist Cuisine at Home that weren't in the original Modernist Cuisine. But in several cases, we took things that were popular from Modernist Cuisine and continued building on them. So, for example, one of our most popular recipes in Modernist Cuisine is this pressure-cooked caramelized carrot soup that's absolutely incredible. It's the best carrot soup you'll ever taste. We took the techniques and the science behind that and turned that into an entire chapter of Modernist Cuisine at Home on pressure-cooked vegetable soups and sauces.
Right. But do you feel that people, in order to make those things, I mean, what kind of equipment are we talking about?
We're talking about you can make the entire book end to end with the equipment that you would find at a Sur La Table or Williams Sonoma, a place like that.
Mm-hmm.
There are some cases where we do call for sous vide, but we devote a section in the beginning of the book showing you how to do improvised sous vide. So if you don't already own a sous vide machine, there are all sorts of ways to do it. You can some of these recipes you can do with a zip top bag in your sink. Some of these recipes you can do.
That's my kind of cooking, pal.
You're speaking my husband's language now.
So in the case where you might not already have that piece of equipment, we offer alternatives. But we're talking about things like, you know, a pressure cooker, which is super versatile and widely available.
Well, and a standby in most people's kitchen, you know, today,
yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Well, it might be in your grandmother's kitchen, which is one of the ironies of this style is that pressure cooking was popular way back when, but then kind of went out of fashion as pressure cookers began exploding. Modern pressure cookers, however, have built-in safety mechanisms, so you don't have to worry about that.
Well, what I do want to talk about a little bit is, and we have to take a break in a minute, but the look of the book is very similar to its predecessor, especially in your photography. And I would love to talk a little bit about what you all had to do. I mean, you like cut a stove in half. I mean, how did you just take a chainsaw? I mean,
well,
how did you do that?
Well, not even how, but why? How does that help me be a better chef?
Well, since you don't cook, what difference does it make?
I'm asking an informed question. Thank you very much.
Sorry, Scott. Go ahead.
One of our thoughts is that we want to show you sort of a different view of cooking as a way to help illustrate all of the complex processes that are going on. So when you roast a turkey in the oven, for example, there are a lot of different physical forces at work, some that counteract each other. And the best way, we think, to illustrate that is to give you these impossible cross-section views of food and equipment that we can then illustrate on top of and say, okay, here is the desiccation zone. zone where the water is evaporating off the skin. And
okay, you just lost us on desiccation zone,
out.
Scott.
What's that?
Desiccation zone?
Desiccation zone.
You lost me.
Desiccation is getting rid of water, so
okay.
Drying out. When you roast a turkey in the oven, for example, the outside of the turkey is the desiccation zone. That's where water is actually being removed from the bird and starts to dry out. And as part of that process, it kicks off another process where the juice from inside the bird is brought towards the surface. So there are, and there are dozens more of these forces at work. We think that it's valuable to have at least a basic understanding of the things that are happening, and we think the cutaway photos are a great way to illustrate that.
Well, I mean, they're a fabulous visual, and I really don't disagree with you, but I'm getting the
we got to take a quick
commercial break sign. So do you mind staying on the phone for just a sec?
My pleasure.
All right, Scott, we'll be back with you in just a sec. We're getting more modern in the studio. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be right back.
The patio is now open at Founding Farmers in Potomac. Dining al fresco in Montgomery County was never better. It's an idyllic setting, away from traffic, comfortable seating in a luscious garden setting. Dine al fresco on cool evenings around the fire pit. Founding Farmers in Montgomery County, just off Route 270 at Montrose Road West. A delicious getaway for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and weekend brunch. Founding Farmers, award-winning menus of great scratch-made foods with ingredients from American family farmers and from across the region. See the menu at wearefoundingfarmers.com.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering in. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Well, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis, and we're drinking Catoctin Creek spirits and eating pickles and Johnny's and shiitakes and all kinds of crazy stuff. It's fun. And, Scott, you're still on the phone with us, yes?
I'm with you.
Good. Great. So, Nikki and I were talking this morning. This is a huge project. How many people were involved with putting this book together?
Modernist Cuisine at Home had a team of over 25 folks. Both research chefs, photographers, editors, writers, recipe testers, fact checkers, all sorts of people contributed.
And does everybody have like a specific job? I mean, how do you all work together?
It's a really cool system. It's driven largely by the culinary team and the discoveries that they make. But Nathan, our sort of head honcho, had a pretty clear vision at the outset of what he wanted this book to cover. And the final product ended up being really close to Nathan's initial prediction.
Well, so unlike the other book, what is the original multi-volume book cost, I think, what, $600? Wasn't that the cost?
Yeah, the list price was $625.
Right. So this is a lot more
affordable.
Yes.
Right? It's coming in at $140?
The list price for Modernist Cuisine at Home will be $140. The street price should be a little lower than that.
Okay. And on the black market, what are we thinking? What do we think it's going to go for?
On the black market, way higher.
$300. And how many pages is the book?
The book is 406 pages.
It's still a heavy
book. It's a speed read. No problem.
It's actually about the size of one of the volumes of Modernist Cuisine.
Well,
and it's the same paper size, same print quality, same all of that stuff.
It's beautiful. The people have got to see. I mean, not only did you cut stoves and things in half, but the photography, it looks like Minority Report. Remember when Tom Cruise is moving all that stuff around?
Yeah, it's fabulous.
I mean, there are images layered on images. It's really, really well done.
All right, so Scott, tell people when they can buy the book and where they can find it.
Well, you can pre-order immediately, and the book will be on bookshelves everywhere better books are sold on October 8th.
Excellent. All right, well, we can't wait.
Oh, wait a minute. Where are worse books sold? That's what I want. Those are the ones I like.
I know you do. All right, Scott, thank you so much for joining us this morning. We're so thrilled to learn all about this. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous book, and we wish you the best of luck.
Thank you.
All right, take care. And we're back to Ann Cashin and Johnny Facchino. And we noted in all the materials that were sent to us that you and Carla Hall are doing a something soon, and I think we should talk about that because that sounds like fun.
I would love to talk about that. We are so excited about this event. Essentially, we are hosting together at Johnny's Half Shell a book signing event. There is a new book coming out. The name of it is Skirt Steak.
Mm-hmm.
It's written by a young but I think already very highly regarded food writer named Charlotte Druckmann.
Mm-hmm.
She'll be at Johnny's. Carla and I will be
this is on October 18th, right?
Yeah, October 18th. Mm-hmm. Carla and I are each doing 5 different hors d'oeuvres. We'll have a signature cocktail, wine, beer.
I can already tell you what cocktail you should do. I'm just telling you.
I think you're right. It's a $45 event, mm-hmm. but that includes a copy of Skirt Steak, which
cool.
you can obviously have signed to yourself or possibly to someone else as a gift. Charlotte will be reading. I think it's just going to be a lot of fun. I mean, the book is getting a lot of attention. She interviewed 73 chefs nationwide. So it really is sort of a composite look at what it has been like to hang in and even excel in an industry that was not particularly populated by women even 20 years ago. So it should be a very interesting read.
I bet. Well, and I'm sure you can speak to that as one of the few women chefs in D.C. I mean, there's not a lot of women chefs
in
D.C.
No. In fact, Carla was the only other D.C. resident who was interviewed for the book.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
Well, tell us a little bit. I mean, we haven't really talked about the food at Johnny's.
Yeah.
I mean, we know Johnny's Half Shell, that it's seafood focused, but the menus evolve. So tell us what you're playing with these days.
Well, you know, we always try to keep current with the season. Right now we're in that sort of great transition period, which I like a lot.
It's not good for clothes, I have to be honest.
Well, clothes don't really matter. I mean, I'm in uniform here. But in terms of food, I find it pretty exciting. As much as I love, you know, tomatoes and all the really hot weather stuff, having grown up in Mississippi, I'm particularly partial to that. Getting into sort of the sort of mellower, richer flavors of autumn is nice too. And so what I brought here today is a salad that really is kind of, if you want to think of it that way, it's like a tapestry of fall. There's apples, sage, roasted squash. This is actually a new variety of squash that we...
I was going to ask what it is.
Yeah,
it's
not butternut squash.
Okay.
It's an Italian squash. It's called Piana di Napoli. It's enormous.
The feet of Naples.
It's about 3.5 feet long and about...
Piana di Napoli is full of Naples.
And the consistency is great for salad because it's somewhere between a butternut squash, which I find sometimes gets a little bit too creamy and soggy for me
mm-hmm.
when it's roasted, and an acorn squash, which tends to stay crisper and
okay,
have that
neat.
Little... Yeah, so it's got a nice
Where
texture for salad.
It, if it's super long and thick, no
there
seeds?
Virtually no seeds. It
oh.
is 100% flesh. Yeah.
Neat.
I mean, you have to peel it. It's green. It looks like a giant zucchini. And then you cube it and you roast it. We roast it with a little bit of honey as well.
Well, I think a real Italian should try it, don't you?
yeah. So
You're
wait
not
a minute,
really
because
Italian.
I wait,
you
I haven't drunk.
Carmelo, vieni qua. All right. Well, while we're doing that, we're going to switch subjects.
Yes, we are.
Yeah. We've got Guy Golan, who's the sommelier at J&G Steakhouse, with our friend, and he's a repeat guest, and so is Scott Harris of Catoctin Creek. I got a speech impediment, which is perfect for the radio, by the way.
It's easier if you
Catoctin Creek Distillery up in Percival. So, and they're in talking about a new signature whiskey that you've cooked up for J&G, but before we talk about that specifically, when we first met you, you literally, the distillery had just opened.
It just launched.
Were, you know, you were like,
I mean, it has, I mean,
a babe
your
in the
success
woods.
Doesn't have anything to do with you appearing on our
no,
show.
No, of course
anything.
Not.
We got the Nikki Nellis bump. Yeah.
Excellent.
Excuse me, the Nikki Nellis bump? What the?
Excellent, Hootie excellent.
The what am I, chopped liver? Barry, am I? All right. So, what's been happening? How's
so this? It's been fun. When we started, you know, D.C. has always been our home market. We're about an hour from D.C., and we've done really well kind of just getting into the city and showing up more and more places, and people really are taking to our stuff. It's, you know, handmade, you know, local spirits, and that plays well. You know, we've seen the food culture down here, local food. You know, people want to know where their chickens are from, where their salad, where their
vegetables
are.
We are a demanding crew.
Yeah.
We are.
And we see the same thing for whiskey. You know, people really like knowing that this was made, you know, an hour from here by a small family-run operation. That mm-hmm. really resonates with, I think, a lot of the consumers down here.
Well, and I also think the restaurateurs down here, I think they know what the public is asking for,
yeah.
and if they can help somebody local, it's all the better. Don't
yeah.
you agree?
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
Now how did you – so what were your two products for this?
So we have a number of products now,
okay.
but the two sort of anchor products that we had starting the company was our Mosby Spirit, which is a 100% rye whiskey mm-hmm. – or I'm sorry, 100% rye grain spirit. Truly, it's legal Virginia moonshine.
Okay.
It is unaged. It's a clear spirit.
It makes me nervous just hearing
it. It's quite
that.
Lovely. It's quite lovely. And there's not a lot of stuff out there that's quite like it, mm-hmm. unless you're getting illegal moonshine from a guy in a, you know, in a jar. But the Mosby Spirit is historically...
Guy what, in a jar?
Well, the
you know, they serve it in a jar.
You mean a little guy in a...
We've seen some chefs walking around with stuff in a jar. I've
yeah.
seen it.
Yeah.
No, thank
so
you.
This is what people historically in Virginia were drinking before Prohibition. Civil War times, this was very common. People weren't aging their spirits. They were just drinking it clear like this. So we, mm-hmm. we produced that as a little sort of homage to history. And then the Roundstone Rye, which is our most popular spirit, is your classical rye whiskey. Aged in Minnesota white oak, and it gets this beautiful, rich brown color.
Mm-hmm.
And we were doing an event at the J&G Steakhouse and working very closely with Guy. And it was a cocktail evening, and it was, I think, celebrating whiskey cocktails for summer.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to playing around with just different ratios, and Guy was thinking, why don't we try to come up with some special blend? And we started playing with the two of them and came up with this 515 blend, a very nice... blend of the two.
Well, let me ask you something. I mean, is that something like playing with, is that what you guys normally do? I mean, do you become like mad scientists and blend your different products?
Absolutely not.
And do you say Frankenstein or Frankenstein?
Frankenstein.
So there's, you know, there's
Guy, you got to speak, get close to the mic.
There's people in Scotland and that have been doing this, and so there were five, I guess. They really know what they're doing. We did not. Try to compete or do anything like that. Is it's just a way to accentuate mm-hmm. the unique qualities of an organic product from Virginia. I mean, from all the whiskeys that I've tasted, the whiskey that Scott makes, when you taste it, you really have a clear flavor profile of fruit, of spices. You can take a lot of whiskeys out there, and if you taste them, you'll notice that one thing. You taste the Minnesota oak, and you taste just the beautiful expression.
So will this only be available at J&G?
I think for now.
Yeah, that's correct. We're basically...
Today, Washington, tomorrow's our world.
Right now, this product is only licensed to sell in D.C.
Okay.
We don't have permission to sell it anywhere else.
Just the
515, yeah. The other products, of course, we sell nationwide.
Right. Now, but, what does the 515 stand for?
515 is the address.
Oh,
it's,
there you go. And was there a flavor profile you were looking for? I mean, what were you looking for, the two of you, in this finished product?
The first thing that I noticed when I tasted the Roundstone, almost as its name, it's a very round whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you go to the Mosby, when you get to taste it now, you'll get to taste the Mosby first.
Okay.
It has greener notes. It's a lighter style. It's moonshine.
Okay, this
I love
is the
it.
Grain.
So
right?
This is, I'm passing around glasses of the Mosby Spirit for people to enjoy. The Mosby Spirit, you know, I like to compare the two. If you're familiar with wine, it's very common. It's very floral. And so think of it like you would think of an oaked or an unoaked Chardonnay. An unoaked Chardonnay is very light, aromatic, and fruity.
Mm-hmm.
And an oaked Chardonnay is very rich, round, and buttery because of the wood.
Okay.
And this is the same thing
going on here.
That's
how I describe myself.
Rich, round, and buttery?
Yes, sir.
Or light and fruity.
Or both. Depends on my mood.
So the Mosby's...
After he has the drink, then we'll tell you more.
So the Mosby's, the Mosby's here then is that light, and it's not nearly so harsh. You know, you say moonshine, people get a little nervous, but it's really quite light.
Okay,
it makes
so
me
sorry.
Want to go out and drive my 55 Ford real fast.
We have to take a break. Okay, when we come back, we're going to be mixing up some cocktails and talking a little bit more about what's going on
apparently
in J&G's Steakhouse.
Apparently no one here saw Robert Mitchum in Thunder Road.
I am speaking.
Oh, well.
This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth every Saturday here on Federal News Radio at 10 a.m. Please join me this week for my special guest, Andy Smith, principal at the McLean Group, and he'll tell us all about the business valuation practice and M&A practice of his firm. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia, serving the D.C. metro area. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon Family Groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you could learn in an Al-Anon Family Group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-Al-Anon.
It's about smiles. It's about laughter. It's about going out and making a difference in the life of a child. You don't have to get mad. You just have to go mad. GoMad2011.com is a website dedicated to supporting the Make-A-Wish Foundation. At GoMad, our mission is simple, to go out and make a difference. So how can you help? Visit the Wish Wall on GoMad2011.com and make a contribution today. Or find out how you can donate with a simple text message. Do it now so that we can continue to touch the lives of children with life-threatening conditions by granting their wishes.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
I need some answers. September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
Hey, everybody, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We got a studio full of guests. Before we get back to them, I just want to thank the folks that helped make this show possible. And if you're not one of those, don't feel bad. Just get on the bandwagon. Georgetown Bagelry, greatest bagels in town, despite what you know.
No disrespect to DGS.
To our boys. The Neighborhood Restaurant Group, that's the Two Rusticos, Evening Star, Tallulah, Vermilion, Buzz Bakery.
Barry knows a little bit about Tallulah.
Yes, he does. Columbia Firehouse, Birch and Barley, and Church Key, the two founding farmers, including the very cool new one out in Potomac. Farmer Fisher and Baker, that's just opening in the...
In November
in the Georgetown Harbor,
mm-hmm.
Central Farm Markets, the Black's Restaurant Groups, and the Monaco Hotel and their fabulous Post Restaurant, where we will be coming to you live October 14th, next week from 11 to 12. If you want information, call Post, and we're going to have a blast. It's going to be an unbelievable event.
Great
and
show.
Such a bargain. So be sure to be there.
Okay.
So let's go back to Guy.
Okay. Guy, you're going to be shaking up a cocktail. Before you start shaking, just tell us what's in this cocktail.
This is called the
you got to get close to the mic.
It's called a Passion Whiskey Fizz.
Mm-hmm.
It is not actually a fizz. It's just called a fizz because you'll notice the foam and how delicious it is.
Uh-huh.
It is with a passion chili.
You need to get down more.
Passion chili base.
Mm-hmm.
And with the 515 whiskey base.
Excellent. Yes. All right, we'll get to shaking.
Well, I want to know if, Guy, have you ever, since your name in French is Guy, have you ever considered calling yourself Guy and just for girls?
No.
No? I'm just, okay. Just wanted to know.
So, Scott, when you guys are doing this blend, I mean, what did you do? Are you just, like, pouring them both in at the same time? I mean,
a little bit.
Work?
I mean, we had different ratios. We had a measuring cylinder, and we were doing it somewhat scientifically with some of the staff at the J&G from both Washington and the New York Hotel branch office.
Mm-hmm.
We were testing that, and then we were passing it around and getting people to taste it, you know, and see what they thought. And it's interesting because I get a question, you know, well, is this just sort of like if the rye is 2 years old, is this like the rye when it's 1 year old in the cask, because we're putting some of the new make spirit back into it?
Sure.
And it's actually not. What's interesting is the way that the rye develops in the cask, there's a lot of complex sort of reactions that are occurring between the whiskey and the wood. And what we've done is we've held back some of the whiskey to have no interaction with the wood, so it don't lose almost immediately when you put it into the barrel. You lose a lot of that light aroma, fruitiness, and some of that. So by putting the new make back in with the aged whiskey, you get to preserve and keep some of that and add this new depth, this new element to it.
And is that something that we should be looking for in a whiskey? I mean, I don't know enough about it to know.
I'm starting to feel like I used to in chemistry class where I would zone out.
Yeah, sorry about that.
I just don't, you know.
It's all about whiskey, though. No, so the it's basically
okay, wait,
all about...
Okay, that's the line of the show. It is all about whiskey. End of story.
Here it is.
It's basically, what we're doing is we're just trying to capture sort of the best elements of both, the rich, round butteriness of the roundstone rye with that lovely light floral sort of aroma that comes with the Mosby's.
Am I drinking the 515 here?
This is the roundstone rye that I've passed out, and Guy's going to make the cocktail
this
with the 515.
This is delicious.
I'm just sort of curious. I mean, do you want people to make cocktails with your product, or
well,
do you prefer they drink them straight?
No, actually, my wife has a good line on this. She doesn't care if you put it in Dr. Pepper as long as you're buying it. So,
your wife's a capitalist.
Yeah, she is. That
we're
is
all
true.
Socialists.
My take is, you know, everybody enjoys things the different way, and I'm not much about wine snobbery or any kind of whiskey snobbery. You know, my assistant distiller Greg, he likes his with a couple ice cubes. In Scotland, they would say that's heresy. I like all my spirits neat. I would probably drink the Hum neat as well.
Mm-hmm.
But cocktails are lovely, you know, and the Roundstone Rye makes a really kick butt Manhattan.
He said butt.
And you'll have to bleep that later. Cocktails are perfectly nice. And we've spent an awful lot of time working with a lot of restaurants on cocktail programs. And it's been part of, I think, how we've done so well is that our whiskeys do really well in cocktails. They blend really nicely.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm seeing your product in... more and more. I mean, not the 515, obviously.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Just a J&J, but I'm seeing your product in more and more restaurants. So tell us about this event. The launch is on the 10th?
The 10th. That's a Wednesday.
Okay. And what does that mean? It means everybody can now get access to the product
that's
and
right.
the cocktails?
So we're basically going to be serving this in the J&J Steakhouse, but also within the other restaurants throughout
the wine bar
and the wine
upstairs?
Bar and the POV, yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is great. And you don't really taste the whiskey here, though.
It's there. It's adding some depth to that passion cocktail.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Very delicious.
It's equal parts of the
whiskey. You have to get close to that mic.
It's equal parts of the whiskey and the passion chili.
Mm-hmm. It's really
and
nice.
And a little bit of ginger ale.
All
it's
right.
Very simple.
So how many cocktails are you doing?
We haven't decided yet.
Oh, okay. But
he's
this
not
is
telling
one of
you,
them.
Nick.
I know.
Right?
I'm not getting
state
any information.
Secret.
Right now at J&J, we feature the Roundstone with the Passion Whiskey Sour.
Mm-hmm.
We also are going to build cocktails specifically for the 515. The whole idea of 515 is, you know, is not only showcasing Scott's distilling abilities, but also it's just paying homage to that location of mm-hmm. 515 Street, because, you know, if you would go hundreds of years ago and you would drink whiskey in that area, it would probably be made the way the Scott makes it.
Excellent.
And that's the first thing that I tasted in this product.
All right. Well, everybody go to J&G and try 515, 515 from Catoctin Distillery. Yeah?
Yeah.
All right.
Sounds
man.
Good.
I want to get back to Johnny Folchino and Ann Cash, and before we have to close out.
Now, Johnny's going to make another cocktail. Johnny, quickly tell us what it is.
This is a Dancing Pines Milk Punch, and Milk Punch is a classic New Orleans cocktail that everyone used to...
I have to drive after this, dude.
Well, that's what you're supposed to do after you have it. That's what I do.
Look out, kids.
Take the Metro.
Uncle David's coming.
Shaking that. Okay. I'm going to ask Ann. Ann, you guys have two other restaurants opening up. You got your taqueria coming back because it's closed right now, right?
Actually, no.
Is it open?
Yeah, we still have the taqueria open behind Johnny's Half Shell, but we will be relocating it. Hopefully, but before the end of the year, we think we're looking at December-ish.
Okay.
And we're
it's
moving
another
it,
ish.
Yeah. We're moving to T Street, right around the corner from 14th.
Okay. Is it in the old post house?
Yes, it's in
such
the
a great
old,
building.
Yeah. So we are